League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Quick shot, score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
Turn it for Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters. On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. We begin hour number two here. And, of course, this show is always brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. All you got to do is call 713-322-HURT. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They'll handle your case. They are getting soccer on the radio, and we are thankful for them and their support because it's helped provide us an outlet for the sport here, platforms for some of the great personalities in the game, including the next guy. He was a goalkeeper for the New York Cosmos. You know him as a color analyst for the New York Red Bulls. But most importantly, you know him as my partner on the World Cup. Just kidding. He is the one and only Shep Messing. Shep, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, that's a great intro, but I would have preferred you started with my friend. Yeah. Our friendship, Glenn, goes way back. It grows every year. Broadcasting the World Cup for ESPN, yelling at the guy, whatever his name is, for the bagel, Jed Drake. We had a good time. Thanks,
we have Glenn. Had a great time. By the way, Shep and I were talking prior. Shep is maybe the only guy who's ever played with Franz Beckenbauer, Eusebio, and Pelé as teammates. So think about that for a second. But I want to go back to a Pelé story. Yesterday, I did a college game for the ACC, Boston College and Boston University. And in some discussions with the producer before, Mike, we came to Nickerson Field, and the night the Boston Minutemen were playing the New York Cosmos at the time, the Cosmos had Pelé. You were in goal for the Boston Minutemen, and the fans broke onto the field to maul Pelé. Can you give me some recollection of that?
Yeah, Glenn, I'm going to give you more than a recollection. And you know every time you have me on your show, I give you a tidbit you never heard before. So you teed me up beautifully for that one. First of all, I want to set the stage because that Boston Minutemen team with Wolfgang Sundholz, myself, Eusebio Simões, the international midfielder for Portugal, we were a terrific team, and we were owned by a guy, an owner, great guy, John Sturge, but he was going out of business. So literally, we were having trouble collecting our paychecks. We would have to go after a game, rush to the hot dog stand, try and see how much money was there for us to get paid. So that sets the table for this game. Pelé's first visit to Nickerson Field, John Sturge needed a big gate. So what did he do? He just kept printing tickets, and Nickerson Field filled up. He kept selling tickets. So when the game started, literally the fans, the stands were packed, but there was an overflow crowd that went right up to the touchline. So literally, I'm in goal, and to the side of me, right up to the corner kick flag, they were standing 30 feet deep, right?
Jeez.
This will describe to you what happened that sparked the crowd oversurging, Pelé getting hurt. So Pelé actually took a shot. It just went 1-2 feet wide on my left post, but the crowd was standing right there on the line. So the ball rebounded back into play, and one of his teammates put it in for a goal. That's why the crowd erupted, because actually there was no goal, but the referee had signaled goal. The rebound off the crowd, onto the field, a guy hammers it home. Now Pelé is running to try and get away from a crowd that's surging onto the field. It was an absolute calamity. And look, the happy ending to the story for me, because there was a melee in the middle of the field. Some of the players, myself included, rushed to try and protect Pelé, pull people off him before security fought their way through the crowd to get him out. 3 weeks later, I played against Pelé at Yankee Stadium. We, as you know, Glenn, in those days, no draws. We go to penalty kicks. And Pelé takes the fifth kick at Yankee Stadium. I grew up a block away from Yankee Stadium. I save it, get a fingertip on it. Boston Minutemen win the game. The next week, Bob Rigby breaks his collarbone. I'm at the airport, Logan Airport, trying to fly to Seattle. And I get a phone call from the New York Cosmos saying, they just bought me for 22 round trip plane tickets for the team to go to Seattle. I get to the locker room and you imagine how I'm feeling. I fly down to New York. I go to Yankee Stadium. I'm in the locker room. Pelé comes up to me. He goes, I was the guy who said, get me that Boston goalkeeper. He said, because you played outstanding. You saved the shot, but you also saved my life in wow. Boston in the crowd. So
what a fantastic story. Oh, my God.
We still laugh about it today. It was scary at the moment.
Well, that's kind of ironic because Pelé's last game at Giants Stadium, you were one of the guys holding him up as you ran him around the field. So it kind of came full circle in that moment, didn't it? When you were lifting him up and carrying him around at that time, I mean, can you know, what's going on in your mind? I mean, other than you're lifting him, but you know, this is it for him. And this is a guy you've shared a lot of moments with.
Yeah. Look, Len, you know the feeling. When you're a teammate, you're a teammate, right? It's only when you look at it after, and I see to this day the picture on my wall or in Major League Soccer that has that same picture in the hallway, that you realize the magnitude of the moment. All we wanted to do at that moment was honor him as our friend, as our teammate. The monumental nature of it doesn't settle in till later. It was the same for our final game with Pelé against Seattle in Soccer Bowl, the game being played in Portland. It was the first time you saw guys like Franz Beckenbauer in the huddle, in the locker room, almost teary-eyed, and we all gathered around, and Pelé never asked for anything. And before that game, in a huddle, Pelé had us huddled around him, and he goes, please, guys, one more game, right? How do you not do everything to deliver that to him?
Now, you've always said, and we're talking to Shep Messing, you've always said he's the greatest. Tell me why again.
His humanity, his humble nature, his grace, his dignity. So many times we'd go into a restaurant in Manhattan or another city, Pelé would always walk directly back into the kitchen because he knew he wasn't about being the superstar out, you know, in a special table signing autographs. He was a man of the people, and he knew his real visceral fans were working in the kitchen, the busboys and the chefs and the cooks. Same at an airport, whether it's in Tokyo or Paris or Rome, he would never walk away from a child, never. And he'd have to be pulled away. Otherwise, he'd be signing all day. And I'll tell you one last mention of the man he is. I'm fortunate enough as his friend to have been invited down to Brazil. He has a 400-acre farm outside of Sao Paulo, a couple of hours away. He's got a big house there, his mother, his sister, his brother, but 400 acres. And when people in Brazil realized that Pelé had bought this land, they started migrating there from all over Brazil because the law down there is if the land is unused, not being used for agriculture or farming or produce, they could put a flag in the ground and live there. So what did Pelé do? Now thousands of people are starting to migrate to put a flag on his property. What did Pelé do? He built homes all around the perimeter of the property, probably enough to accommodate 1,000 people. Then, yes, he used the rest of the land for farm, agriculture, produce, but not before he built homes for these people migrating to get close to him who had no homes. And I'll never forget going down there. Pelé loved to drive this, you know, it's like a golf cart, a four-wheeler. And we would go around the property, and he'd always go around the perimeter just to see all the people that were there, wave to them, go out and shake their hands. And to this day, it really gives me goosebumps to see the kinds of things he did. And you know, the people of Brazil, I'd be there. It could be a 10-year-old child in one of the homes Pelé built, and they'd see us on the golf cart, and they go, "Goleiro, goleiro de Cosmos." So, yeah, I mean, awesome. the legend for me is way beyond what he did on the field.
Well, you're a legend also. And I just, we got a couple minutes here. We got about 3 minutes. So I want to take you in before I let you go. I do want to, and these are amazing stories, and we're going to do more. And I do want to bring you back on the show to talk about the Indoor Soccer League venture you're involved in, because it's actually really, really interesting what you've told me about it. But we'll bring you back on, and we'll do a whole special thing on that. But just give our fans here in the Houston market and around the country a little bit of a take on the New York Red Bulls currently.
Well, I'll tell you what. All you got to do is look in the mirror at your team in Houston, because this Red Bull team, I'm really surprised, because I had great anticipation at the beginning of the season. I still do, because they brought in a guy named Kevin Thelwell at the top of the pyramid, sports director, whatever the title is. This guy knows what he's doing. He'll figure it out. He'll put together a good team. But for this season, so many new players, so young. They're the youngest team in the league. There's no real guy or presence on the field who can say, "Hey, settle down, play through me." They have given away so many points in games that they were leading in the second half. That speaks to the immaturity, to the youth. And really, they don't have that veteran presence who knows how to manage a game when you have a lead, and especially when you have a lead playing at home. So, look, like many other teams, Glenn, in Major League Soccer, Houston for sure, I follow them because of you and because of Tab. You know, they're struggling, and they have to try and fix it. Good news is you got plenty of time left. You still can get on a run. Look, do I think Red Bulls are going to turn it around completely? I hope so, but, you know, I'm not betting on it. I do like the direction that Kevin Thelwell is taking the team with Gerhard Struber. But at the end of the day, and that was a speech last week in the locker room after a disappointing loss at home to Chicago. Hey, look, we could talk and talk about tactics and press and counter press. Somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to win a game, right? Time for talk at this juncture in the season for all the teams. Time for talk is over. You got to get results.
Shep, you're a beauty. I love having you on, and we're going to get on again, and we're going to continue to talk. I thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And as always, I send you my best back up to the East Coast from down here in the heart of Texas.
Well, I'm going to give a message as I say goodbye to your sponsors. You know, let's pony up. Glenn has the best show. It's why I do it. And I'm ready to partner with him. Get those sponsors to double dip. Let's raise the level, and I'll go on you with you, Glenn, anytime.
Boy, we'll have a great show. We got to keep working on that. We'll get that done. He's the one and only Shep Messing. Shep, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Anytime, my friend. Be well.
All right. Shep Messing brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, FM Kitchen and Bar. We'll take a break. We have more to come.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight. It is a big week for Greg Berhalter and the U.S. national team. Our next interview is brought to you by FM Kitchen and Bar. Now, there are two locations, one in the Montrose area and one, which is my go-to right near me. It's north of Washington on Shepherd. They got a big outdoor area. It's like a beer garden. You can bring your dogs. But the thing I like about FM Kitchen and Bar is simply this. Craft cocktails combined with the freshest of food. Great burgers, great chicken sandwiches, great salads. FM Kitchen and Bar, they're proud sponsors of Soccer Matters. Two locations, one in the Montrose area on Montrose and Westheimer next to Velvet Tacos, and the FM Kitchen and Bar on Shepherd, just north of Washington. Our next guest, former U.S. men's national team defender, one of the original players of Major League Soccer in Colorado. He is the one and only Marcelo Balboa. Marcelo, thanks for coming on.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Happy to have you on, as always, and it's always fun. I just want to know, what has been your latest hiking adventure? Because I see these pictures, and are you trying to make the rest of the world very jealous about what you're doing?
No, you know, I try to enjoy every day as much as possible. I've realized then, you know, over the last quite a few years, you realize that time is limited. So you must enjoy every day to its fullest. And that's what I try to do. I take my dog. We did 7 miles already this morning. And I live for today and not for tomorrow. How's that?
So that'll do it for our interview with Marcelo Balboa. What more can we do after that? That's about as great of advice as you can actually get. I mean, I love that. What a great way to start the show.
Yeah, you know what? With everything that's gone in this world, if we don't enjoy every day, you know, I have friends that well, tomorrow, well, I don't know if I have tomorrow. I don't. So I know I have today. I will enjoy today as much as I can. And when I wake up tomorrow morning, if I wake up tomorrow morning, I'll have my cup of coffee and we'll move on for what's going to happen, the adventure that day. The good thing is not knowing the adventure of the day. That's the fun part.
Marcelo Balboa joining us. Is that the way you played the game? Game to game.
No, I played it like an asshole. I'll be honest with you. I did. I played it and I was quoted, not quoted, Paul Gardner quoted as playing angry, playing self-destructive. I played it like my dad taught me to play it, to defend your position, to play every day as hard as you can, because there's always someone behind you wanting your job. Somebody always wants your job. So I played it to the fullest. Every time I stepped on the field, I made sure I did everything possible to keep my job. And yes, I tackled hard. Yes, I was a different person on the field than I am off the field. But that's what got me to where I'm at. That's why I got to play in the 94 World Cup after coming back from an ACL. That's why I scored goals, because I was eager to please. And I wouldn't allow the door to be open a little bit for anybody. And I was lucky enough. I got one big injury, and that one almost kept me out of a World Cup. But with God's good graces watching me and helping me, I got back and I played. So I played it differently than the person I am off the field.
Former U.S. men's national team defender Marcelo Balboa. So in the context of what you just said, when you look at the American player now, you did kind of describe a lot of American players back then. Yeah. It was about fight, determination, yeah. A lot of your teammates. Yeah. Grit, being hard. How has the American player changed? And did we lose a little bit of that maybe?
I don't think we did. I think we lost it in 2018. I think we took it for granted in that last qualifier. I think everybody felt that we were going to win against Trinidad. So everybody kind of just assumed we were going to win and took it for granted. And welcome to getting smacked in the face. We got smacked in the face. So that generation's gone. This new generation of kids, you can see they're eager to represent that jersey. They're eager to put on that red, white, and blue. They're eager to change the perception of what that group was in 2018. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about this group. 12 players, I believe it is, playing in Champions League, which is the first time we've had that. So this is a group to me that has that bite, that has that grit, it has that balance. And I think that's important. Especially when you talk about the midfield with Weston McKennie, the way he hits and he fights. Acosta now breaking into that lineup is another guy who's a fighter, who's a scratcher that's going to break up plays. So I think we've gone away from from that whole, we want to be technical, we want to look good. Now we've got fighters and we got guys that are hungry.
Yeah, we got a bit of both, and that's a good thing. Marcelo Balboa joining us. All right, so if I look at what you just said about the U.S. men's national team roster, I want you to answer that question now based on MLS.
Okay.
And MLS now. Is there enough pressure on players throughout the league now?
Throughout the season?
Throughout the league. Is there enough healthy pressure on players in Major League Soccer to help them accelerate their growth? And obviously it's in certain markets and not in others.
Yeah, I think in certain markets, when you're starting to see a lot of these homegrowns playing and they're starting to put them out there and they're playing consistently every day, that pressure of these kids playing and getting sold is huge. You know, when you got a guy like Buchanan who just got sold, you know, you had Aronson earlier who got sold. So Sammy Vines who just got sold. So I think it's getting better, Glenn, throughout the academy of finding that talent and signing them and putting them on the field. Signing at homegrown is one thing. Signing a homegrown and making him an impact player on the field and he's impacting that starting 11 is completely different. And I think now it's going to take time. We keep talking about 26 years, 25 years compared to hundreds of years in other leagues. So is it getting better? Yeah, it's getting better. Is there still no pressure? You can win a game, lose a game. I mean, relegation always puts pressure on you. So till we get to that point, you know, how much pressure do you have if you don't make the playoffs? You almost get rewarded when you get allocation money. You get gifts to help you next year. So how much pressure is that for a club? You know what I mean?
Marcelo Balboa joining us noted that the 74 MLS players are called up for World Cup qualifying. By the way, when the U.S. Was eliminated from that World Cup, as painful as it was, it only took me 48 hours to look at the future and say, okay, this is good. This will accelerate now the movement of all these young guys. And here we are. You mentioned how many are playing in the Champions League. I look at this midfield, Kellen Acosta, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Christian Roldan. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of excitement. These guys are trying to make it their own.
Yeah.
It all begins Thursday night. It's El Salvador at the Cuscatlan in El Salvador. You've played there many times. Yeah. I've called games there. That is a different environment. You got a former U.S. national team player who you played with, Hugo Perez, as the coach. How does it change on Thursday night? What's different for this U.S. men's national team?
You know what? Let me go back and address it. It took me a little longer, Glenn, than 48 hours to realize what was. No, but it did. I was there. I was there that day that they lost to Trinidad. And I was concerned because I didn't know if we were going to be able to make the right steps and take the right steps to change things. Because we all knew there had to be change. You know what I mean? And no disrespect to anybody. But, you know, it was a bombshell waiting to blow up when we saw what was going on there. So when it finally blew up, sometimes you have to take a step backwards to take two steps forward. And we did, because where would we might have not seen half of these kids if we would have qualified for the 2018 World Cup. So I think that's a huge, huge part. Now, going into Hugo Perez knows the U.S. He's worked with Tab with the under 20s. He's been in the U.S. national team system. He's changed the mentality of how Salvador is playing. He's changed the mentality of how they're going to fight and scratch. He's also looking in the United States for Salvadorian Americans who he's starting to pull in when we've seen Alex Roldan. So Hugo's changing that environment over there. Now, having to go play at Cuscatlan with the grass very thick, the fans who are very heavy and very, very favorable to their team, makes it very difficult to play in that environment. It's not playing in Europe. It's not playing in these beautiful grass fields. We know that the grass will probably be an extra inch or two longer. There's quite a bit of obstacles you're going to have to overcome when you go to Salvador.
Marcelo Balboa joining us. The Cuscatlan Stadium, at least the last time I was there, I felt like I was in some ancient ruins that may crumble at any moment. it was an incredible experience
stadium.
Being
there. It's a classic.
Oh, incredible experience.
Yeah. You can't tell somebody this is the environment you're going into. You got to live it. And when you get there and you see the stadium, it takes you back a long time ago and it makes this is just what it is. This is some of the environments that you're going to have to deal with in CONCACAF. And listen, people talk about England playing in Europe and they get to play. That's not happening in CONCACAF. There's a lot of obstacles that you're going to have to deal with in qualifying through CONCACAF, which are not easy. And getting results on the road is not easy in CONCACAF.
Funny story, to get to my position in the booth, I had two guys with guns, And I had a shirt on that had a little bit of the color of the opponent that day, which was Mexico. It had a little green in it. And they said to me very gently, you might want to put a different shirt on because we have to walk through this area where they may throw shit at you. And so I got a blue T-shirt and put that on over what I had to get upstairs. And I ended up changing in the booth.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough when I travel, people still remember who we were. So instead of getting upset, they asked for more autographs and we gently and walk by. Now, if we win, it's different. If we lose, it's different. You know how that goes. Mm-hmm. When we go and we're broadcasters and we win somewhere else, we get quite a few nasty comments and sometimes a little bit of stuff thrown at you. But that, you know, again, that's the beauty of our sport, of CONCACAF. And that's what makes it fun.
Do you think we fully realize here what these guys are going to go through on Thursday night? Because look, we got these stadiums. We got the craft beer. We got the beautiful seats. Yeah. We got all the food and we got people for coming to games. Sometimes I think that are coming to games for a lot of alternative reasons. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not beating down on that, but these are people that are going to sit on cement. These are people that are strictly there for a soccer game and trying to slay the beast, which is the United States.
Yep. I don't think you can prepare for that because most of the time when we play CONCACAF teams, we usually play them in the United States. When was the last time we went to Salvador and played Salvador? We played in Guatemala. We played, you know, I mean, in qualifying, but we really don't go to these countries and play. Usually they come to the United States because there's a lot of Salvadorians, Guatemalans, Pura Vida, Costa Ricans. So I think that I think it'll be eye opening. I think it'll be very eye opening for a lot of players who have never gone to Salvador.
Marcelo Balboa joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. All right. Greg Berhalter, give me your thoughts on what he's been doing and how it's been accelerated here as we get into the real stuff, World Cup qualifying against El Salvador.
Yeah. Listen, I think we all were skeptical at first, waiting for this process. He kept on talking about the process and the process. And I think at certain times, everybody has questioned Greg Berhalter. But I got to be honest with you, being able as a broadcaster for Univision, being able to hang out with him, go to practices and see what he's been doing. He sold it to me at Nations League against Mexico because he said it would come together eventually. And when it does, you'll see what we've been working for the last few years. And when it came together against Mexico, because it wasn't an individual effort. It wasn't a Pulisic beating players. It was a collective effort. I finally saw what he was talking about, and I was sold. I finally saw the final product of what he's been talking about for the last few years. And then you see it even more so in Gold Cup because not a lot of people gave that team an opportunity to reach a final. They didn't think they would beat Qatar. They would get to Mexico. Mexico would have beat them in the final. But this team spirit, this belief in what they're doing and how they're doing it, and as a player, when you believe, when you finally believe and you're sold on what's going on and you see it working, you're a tough team to beat. And I think the U.S. right now is a tough team to beat because of finally it all came together. They believe the mentality. Everything has finally clicked for Greg Berhalter.
Is part of this also along with his tactical plan and everything else that he's done with these young guys, and he's guided them beautifully. But is also part of this is just their overall maturity, playing in some of the bigger clubs in the world, playing in the Champions League, and that sort of growth?
That growth, I think, is different because you've got to believe in what the coach is doing. You got to understand what the coach is doing. The coach has to be stern, but he's also got to be funny, and he's got to be able to manage the players. And not one player. He's got to be able to manage 28 players. Because on average, I think they've been between 26 and 28 players in a camp. So, if you don't believe in the coach, you don't do the job. And if you don't do your job, the team suffers. I think everybody's bought in, Glenn. I really think that at the right time, this is finally clicking in for the U.S. national team. It couldn't click in at a better time. Really, two trophies, an MLS Cup win over an MLS All-Star Game win over the Mexican Liga MX. And now you're going into World Cup qualifiers. So I don't think you could have asked for a better time for this all to kind of come to a head and say, okay, now we're ready to go into qualifying. We can't have a hiccup this World Cup qualifier. We can't.
And listen, it seems obvious to me that guys like Tyler Adams, guys like Weston McKennie, guys like Christian Pulisic are saying, look, this is our national team. We want to make it something special. We want to go beyond the bar that's been set. I mean, I think that's pretty visible. And to your point at the beginning, the excitement these guys bring, I love watching them play because I see them putting the sport of soccer first, the national team first, above and beyond anything.
Well, listen, I think that pride is what we see right now in this group. When they wear that national, listen, go back to Nations League. Sure, they didn't play well against Honduras, but neither did Mexico against Costa Rica. But they found a way to win. They found a way. And it wasn't a, you can't go and say, okay, Christian Pulisic led that team. He was the star. He played his role. Weston McKennie did his role. Reyna did, you know, everybody did their job, and collectively it came together. So I'm excited because with Reyna, Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, you look at this group and you're like, my concern is who's the other center back? Who's the other center back next to Jonathan Brooks? That's, you know,
Mark
what I mean?
McKenzie? Who would you go with? Mark McKenzie? You got Miles Robinson, James Sands, Walker Zimmerman. Who do you pick? You're a center back. You got to come up with something here now.
I think it's going to come down to McKenzie, and it's going to come down to the Miles Robinson. Those two, for me, in Gold Cup, Robinson was the best center back in that tournament to me. He killed it for me. Yeah, absolutely won balls in the air. This one is one is one-on-one battles. So McKenzie is had a, you know, he struggled against Mexico. He made the mistake, but he fought back. He did well. So, I think it's going to be a wonderful competition between those two to see who gets that starting role.
All right, who would you pick? I'm putting you.
I
out
know.
There.
I'd have to see him in practice. I haven't seen McKenzie because he's been in Europe, so I'd have to see them in practice.
Okay.
And see how what kind of form they're. I know what Robinson's done because I've MLS. You keep an eye on him, but I haven't seen McKenzie. So.
Yeah, both have been really, really impressive. Yeah. Marcelo, this is great stuff. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. Marcelo, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Have great calls. I know you got a very, very busy week coming up with a lot of different calls. It's a great time to be a commentator and in and around the game. Thank you so much for coming up.
Buddy, thanks for having me again. Have a good one.
All right. Long live HDNet, too, by the way. That was Marcelo Balboa, the former U.S. men's. He's captained the national team. Fantastic career, amazing career. Part of that 94 U.S. World Cup squad. All right, we'll take a break here. Break is brought to you by Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, look, I've driven a BMW for years. Advantage BMW Midtown is my go-to. Go down there, talk to Justin, talk to Steven. These guys are the best. They'll take you through the whole process. They'll get you in whatever you like. You can get in a sedan. Get in an X5. All kinds of great vehicles. Good deals down there. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. They're proud sponsors of this show. And Steven Prather, the head man down there, was out at the Dynamo game recently with his son. So it's Advantage BMW Midtown. Remember, support the sponsors that support your game.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight. It's been a big night on the radio, and we appreciate everybody tuning in. Remember, you get the podcast of this show at hornfm.com in Austin, and in Houston, it's ESPN 975.com, so you can listen to your heart's desire. Show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Give them a call, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They're personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle, work in a refinery, any of these things, you need representation. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, and they get soccer on the radio. So let's just make it as simple as can be. They get us on the air, and we appreciate it. And it allows us to do interviews like this. Houston Dash manager James Clarkson joining us now. James, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, Glenn. No problem. How you doing?
Cavorting around the country, playing the likes of Barcelona. I want to start with the ICC and what a special moment it was to play, you know, a club as big as that from Europe in Barcelona.
Yeah, fantastic. Obviously disappointed because we put ourselves in a really good spot against Portland. We were 2-0 up, played really well in that first half, and really should have made it to the final. But, you know, the consolation was we got to play against Barcelona, and fantastic experience, great for the team. I think it's great for the club as well to raise the profile of the club. And Again, we put ourselves in a fantastic position. We got ourselves in the lead. Unfortunately, we couldn't hold on to it. And, you know, we got beat 3-2, but different style of play. And it was an exciting game for us. And I thought the players responded really well. And, you know, we were able to rotate the squad. We were able to get our internationals back in and get them some game time leading up to the start of our playoff push.
And of course, you do have the upcoming game against Tigres as well, which, again, I think is absolutely exciting for everybody here in Houston to get connected to a brand where so many in the Houston area are connected to Tigres.
Yeah, I think we've worked really hard to get that game. You know, we went down there a couple of years ago. It was a fantastic experience. You know, we want to, you know, provide the same sort of hospitality they showed us and hopefully put on a really entertaining game for the fans. And I think having these games is massive for the growth of the game and the profile of the Dash. And we want to be at the forefront of playing international competition. And, you know, I think these are the first steps in really pushing the boundaries and getting this kind of cup competition involved in our calendar on a yearly basis.
James, let me take you back to the Barcelona game, because Sophie Schmidt joined us on the halftime show of Channel 55, the Dynamo game this past weekend. And we were talking about, you know, just the interaction with the international side here with like the ICC and how important it is. What were some of the comments from your players after playing Barcelona? You know, things that you just heard about that game and maybe the differences in that game based on the NWSL.
I think from a coaching standpoint, the most pleasing thing was how disappointed they were that we threw the game away. And, you know, we spoke about how we've got to be able to influence the game without necessarily having the ball. And the way we played the first half, we were very compact. We worked really hard on trying to control the tempo without necessarily having the ball. We got ourselves into some really good situations that we should have done better on. And then second half, you know, we found ourselves in similar situations that we did what we were supposed to do. And that led to the two goals, which was great. We had a big chance right at the end to tie it up to make it 3-3. And I just think that the overall just experience, you know, I said it's a different style of play and it's that they're very possession based. So it becomes a bit more tactical and it kind of highlights to our players, you know, how important keeping the ball is. So massive learning experience for everyone. But the part was how we were able to have a game plan. Players were able to execute it. It really kept us competitive. It kept us in the game. And like I said, it gave us a huge chance to win the game.
James Clarkson, head coach of the Houston Dash, joining us. Eighth place, 6-3-6. But remember, they're only 3 points out of a playoff spot. So that's pretty deceptive in itself. For you as a coach, and you mentioned their tight play, is there anybody comparatively in the NWSL that you would say would be sort of the Barcelona of the NWSL, which is the best possession-based team that you guys face in league play?
I think there's a lot of teams that have really strong teams. I think OL Reign, who we play on Wednesday, are right up there with the best of them. I think North Carolina are very good, but not necessarily a big possession-based team. But their attack and everything is very dangerous. Same with Portland. So I think there's some really strong teams. Obviously, Portland won the tournament. So it shows the level they're at. They're top of the table as well. And I think when you look at the league table this year, how competitive the league is and the, you know, the small margins between top to bottom, it's an incredibly tough league this year. And I think that's a great sign of the development of the league, of the teams and the progress that we're making.
So the Dash are coming off the 1-0 win over Racing Louisville. Now, do we say Racing or Racing in the NWS? Somebody help me with this, please, because I'm doing both, and I don't think I'm helping anybody to understand.
Yeah, I'm the same. So,
what are we doing, Racing or Racing?
I'm a bit old school, so racing for me. So
now, if this team was in Indianapolis, we would call it Racing, but maybe we'll go with Racing. Okay, so anyway, we got OL Reign tomorrow. That's a big, big game. Get out to that. We are giving tickets or have given tickets out during the show. And then it's Orlando Pride on Sunday. We mentioned the Dash are only 3 points out of a playoff spot. They're coming off the 1-0 win over Racing Louisville. All right. You make some interesting points here with the Barcelona game. But how much pressure really are you feeling, and how much pressure is the team feeling? Because look, this would be monumental to get into the playoffs. The Dash have never been in the playoffs in their existence. And I know you're a competitor. You're a guy that wants to win. This is a big year for the Dash to get in.
Yeah, it's massive. And expectations after last year are much higher this year. We know what we're capable of doing. And that was the first time we really had the full strength squad out at the weekend, and for probably 8-9 weeks, I think it is. And so to have everybody back is very exciting. I thought the first half, you know, we was up until the water break that the last 15 minutes that we stepped it up and really started to play at a really good level. And then second half, I thought for 30 minutes, 35 minutes of that, the start of that second half, I thought we were fantastic. Started to see the players really click. Some of the movement, ball possession and stuff was excellent. The chances we created, you know, we really should have scored a couple more goals. So I know when we're at full strength, we've got our team, we're a good matchup for anybody. And, I think we've got to get into the playoffs. That was the goal at the start of the season. It still is the goal. And obviously, you know, we are competitive. The players want to win it all. But in order to do that, we've got to make the playoffs. So it's vitally important. And these home games are going to be pivotal for it. And if we can do well and win our home games, that probably will be enough to get us into the playoffs. So, we've got the two games this week, and then we have a quick turnaround. We play Chicago the following Friday at home. And all of these teams, we're all competing for the same spot. So these are all massive, you know, 6-point games that will either get us in or knock us out. And, you know, Sunday's game was such a big one that we just really, it was all about getting the 3 points. And the team were fantastic and did really well to see the game out. So it's good. You know, players are excited. You know, I don't need to motivate them, that they know what's on the line. They're all highly competitive people, and that they want to win. So it's good. It's exciting.
James Clarkson joining us, Houston Dash head coach, O.L. Rain tomorrow night, and that is at BBVA Stadium. It's a great opportunity to get down there, see the Dash, see Olympians as they make a push towards the playoffs. Okay, so I remember when the signings occurred with Megan Oyster and Katie Naughton, and this was to address the center back position, and you seemed very happy about this. You were, hey, this is it now. We've got the solidarity we need there. A huge signing this week with Abby Dahlkamper coming from the U.S. Women's National Team, the Courage. Talk to me about that, because, you know, you got a new dynamic here, and I don't think you're bringing her here to sit on the bench. I mean, I think you're bringing here to get a spike to get into the playoffs. So talk about that whole dynamic with these three center backs now.
I think, first off, when a world-class player becomes available as an organization and a team, if we want to progress and be at the forefront and win things, you know, we can't ignore world-class players. The more we can have on the team, the stronger we're going to become. So I thought it was a great opportunity for us to strengthen. The two centre backs, you know, Meg and Katie, they've been outstanding. They've pretty much played every single minute for the last two seasons, and without a break. And we don't have real depth at the centre back position. And if anything was to happen to either of them, we'd be in a real sticky situation. And so to now get that extra depth, it also provides some different tactical looks to how we can set up, how we can play, how we can get different players on the field by having three centre-backs is quite exciting and can give us a different feel when we play certain oppositions. So I think it gives us a bit more flexibility. It gives me the chance to be able to rotate and rest the players, because, you know, like I said, the two centre-backs, it's been tough because they have played every single minute. They've had to do more than at times they usually have. So it's not just the physical, it's the mental load and the wear and tear that it's taken on them week in, week out, and especially when we've got game after game. Fortunate that they don't necessarily give too many fouls away, so they're not faced with suspension, but that could happen. And obviously, you know, heaven forbid, you know, either of them get injured. But so getting that and adding a serial winner like Abby to the team, she's won the championship, she's won a World Cup, you know, she's got huge experience. It can only benefit the whole squad. So it gave everybody a boost. And You know, hopefully we can use this to push us on, get us into the playoffs and go as far as we can.
Now, you talked about three center backs. Is that something that you would do from the start of the game? And does that pose any kind of problems when you talk about integrating that and doing that from the start? And maybe this is simply just to get your best players on the field. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something that we've looked at. You know, we were even looking at the idea when, you know, even before Ali Prisok went on loan, when we had, real three centre backs that we think could play. It gives us an opportunity to get different players onto the field in different ways. And we've played three at the back, but we've usually been chasing the game. So it's sometimes it's easier chasing the game when you can gamble a little bit and push more players forward. So it also gives us that. It gives us the opportunity to be able to play three centre backs, bring one on if we're defending a lead. But it also, from the start, if we're able to do it, getting the amount of training time at the moment with the way the schedule is will be a little bit difficult, but it's certainly something that within the plan is vitally important. You know, we played the other week and I think we played six different formations within the 90 minutes, and having that tactical flexibility is something that is really important. I think it shows the progress of the team and the individuals to be able to make those adjustments in the game. And having those type of players that we have available, I think is really positive, and it gives us another string to our bow that makes us more difficult to play against.
So in a difficult season, I mean, the NWSL coach, this has been a big challenge for all you guys. I mean, with players coming in and out, and we're talking to James Clarkson, head coach of the Houston Dash. Is it risky maybe to make a radical change like that at this part of the season? Is it a good gamble? I mean, that's why they pay you the big bucks. It's easy for guys like me to ask these questions, but that's why they pay you the big bucks. Is that something you still contemplate?
It's something we're contemplating. And obviously, if we do and it works, I'll look like a genius. If it doesn't, I'll look like a fool. So that's the joys of the job. But if I feel that it can help us win the game, and this is the area where we can do this, We've played 4-4-2 recently. Having two forwards, I think, gives us a different look at times. So potentially by playing with three centre backs, we're able to get two forwards on. I just think it gives us a lot more flexibility and variation, and we'll be able to change things up. So I think it's an exciting situation to be in. It obviously brings more headaches because everybody wants to play, and I've now got to manage the team and manage the squad and make sure that everybody's happy, because ultimately it is a squad game and we need everybody to be engaged. You know, those players that were playing during the Olympics did a fantastic job. And now when the national team players come back in, some of them fall out of the starting 11. It's not nice. It's tough, but when they continue to work hard at training, that's what I want. I want to be in those situations where we're having really deep conversations on what the starting 11 should be, and even getting to the stage where, who do we have in the 18? And if we're having those conversations constantly, that shows that we're performing and playing at a really high level. So that's what we need in order to make the playoffs.
James, great catching up with you. Good luck in getting into the playoffs. Good luck tomorrow night against OL Reign, obviously. That is a big one. Looking forward to catching that game. As always, we thank you for coming on and really taking us through everything that is Houston Dash.
All right, appreciate it, Glenn. Thanks very much.
All right, that's the one and only James Clarkson. That's how we wrap it up here tonight in big style. Again, we remind you, OL Reign visiting the Houston Dash tomorrow. There is a great race in the NWSL to get into the playoffs. Also, you can get the podcast of this show at ESPN975.com. On behalf of everybody who came on tonight, listened in, we thank you. Andrew Carlson, our producer, and of course, we want to thank Houston Dynamo owner Ted Siegel for coming on as well and being so candid. That does it tonight. Remember, it's every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock Central, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It is Soccer Matters. And until next Tuesday, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.